y todas las sobras de lo que se robaron, un pueblo escondido en la cima, mi piel es de cuero, por eso aguanta cualquier clima, soy una fábrica de humo.
Estás escuchando el informativo Pacífica.
Los invitamos a visitar nuestro blog en pueblosinfronteras.wordpress.com.
Si deseas comunicarte con nosotros, puedes escribirnos al correo electrónico pueblosinfronteras@gmail.com.
Políticos sin saliva, las caras más bonitas que he conocido, soy la fotografía de un desaparecido, la sangre dentro de tus venas, soy un pedazo de tierra que vale la pena una canasta con frijoles.
En el marco del Día Mundial de la Alimentación celebrado el miércoles, campesinas indígenas peruanas marcharon para exigir se garantice la soberanía alimentaria. Verónica Insausti reporta desde Lima.
Ellas marcharon en defensa de la seguridad alimentaria para todos y llegaron al Congreso exigiendo que aprueben la Ley de Soberanía Alimentaria y Nutricional, proyecto que espera su revisión desde 2012.
Que el gobierno tenga una política de ley agraria, pero referido a los pequeños campesinos, no solamente que sea para los grandes agricultores que tienen grandes hectáreas y hectáreas.
Defender la tierra para sembrar nuestro maíz, nuestras habas, todo lo que produce en el campo.
Además de pedir que se garantice el derecho a más de 13 millones de peruanos y peruanas que viven en situación de riesgo alimentario según cifras oficiales, las mujeres campesinas entregaron un petitorio al Ministerio de Salud para ser realmente incluidas en su atención.
Los pueblos lejanos simplemente tenemos un enfermero, que un simple enfermero hace la práctica de ginecología, de médico, de obstetriz.
¿De qué sirve una posta cuando no hay buenos médicos ni equipos? Entonces, por lo tanto, nosotros estamos abandonadas.
Aquí están, defensoras del Perú.
Las actividades de las mujeres campesinas en Lima culminaron con una ofrenda a la Madre Tierra sobre el cemento de la ciudad, al que denominaron Siembra de la Unidad, en respaldo a una agenda común en favor de la mujer rural.
Se han olvidado nuestros padres de la patria, están prefiriendo la minería, que no están cuidando nuestro agua, no están cuidando nuestro territorio, no están cuidando nuestra Pachamama. Pues señores, por eso ahora las mujeres campesinas por nuestro día nos hemos puesto de pie y hay que hacernos escucharnos.
En el acto, las dirigentes pidieron que el Estado promueva políticas públicas en favor de los pequeños y medianos agricultores, quienes abastecen de alimentos al 60% de la población peruana, según el Centro Peruano de Estudios Sociales, CEPES. Verónica Insausti, Telesur, Perú.
La Organización de Naciones Unidas para la Alimentación y la Agricultura, FAO por sus siglas en inglés, ha destacado el avance en Latinoamérica al mejorar la alimentación de su población. Entre los países donde se ha reducido la desnutrición y el hambre están Venezuela, Brasil y Nicaragua. Bolivia se encuentra a punto de cumplir su meta del desarrollo alimentario gracias al apoyo que provee el Estado a productores campesinos. Así lo afirmó el representante de la FAO, Crispín Moreira.
Tenía 33% de la población en subalimentación. Foi bajando, os últimos 6 anos barrou para 28 e hoje, os dados que divulgamos esta semana, barrou para 21.3%. Ou seja, a meta para 2015 é 17%.
En el marco del Día Mundial de la Alimentación, el ministro boliviano David Choquehuanca destacó el potencial del país para aumentar su producción agrícola.
Podemos producir 20 millones de hectáreas. Utilizamos hoy solamente el 3.5 millones de hectáreas. Y con estos 3.5 millones de hectáreas, poco a poco, estamos recuperando nuestra soberanía para poder garantizar alimento para todos los bolivianos.
En tanto, integrantes de la Vía Campesina en Brasil exigieron frente al Ministerio de Agricultura una reforma agraria y reclamaron créditos del gobierno para los pequeños campesinos.
La reforma agraria es importante y fundamental en este proceso que nosotros estamos haciendo, porque solo así estamos dando oportunidad a los trabajadores de la tierra. Nosotros vamos a fortalecer la agricultura familiar y la producción de alimentos. Cerca del 25% de las tierras están en manos de la agricultura familiar.
Aquí se respira lucha.
Vamos caminando.
Yo canto porque se escucha.
Vamos
desde abajo.
Vamos caminando.
Aquí estamos de pie.
¡Que viva la América! El licenciado licenciado mexicano Leonel Rivero, del despacho Defensa Estratégica en Derechos Humanos y actual defensor del profesor y prisionero político Alberto Patistán, visita el sur de California.
Parte del propósito de esta gira no nada más es dar a conocer la situación que priva en términos de justicia en el país, sino también exponerle a nuestros compañeros en universidades, en organizaciones sociales, pues las experiencias de los últimos años de lucha en términos jurídicos, el caso Atenco, el caso de Francisco Jiménez Pablo, y pues ahora el caso que estamos llevando del profesor Alberto Patistán Gómez, ¿no? Estamos en una etapa ahorita definitoria para que él pueda obtener su libertad, y pensamos que en términos, una vez que se ha agotado la parte jurídica, el Poder Judicial de la Federación le negó toda posibilidad de libertad bajo un recurso legal, pues ahora en el Congreso en este momento se está analizando una modificación al Código Penal que, de pasar por el Congreso, significaría que Alberto pueda obtener su libertad en un plazo corto de tiempo. Sin duda alguna es uno de los asuntos de mayor controversia por la forma tan diferenciada en cómo se ha administrado la justicia. En este caso tenemos ejemplos muy claros en los últimos meses, gente que ha quedado en libertad como Raúl Salinas, como Elba Ester, que recién le dictaba un auto de libertad, como el mismo Caro Quintero, como José Antonio Zorrilla Pérez, el asesino intelectual de Buendía. Y bueno, por otro lado vemos que gente como Alberto, gente indígena, pues no tienen el mismo acceso a la justicia en términos de una impartición benéfica para ellos, ¿no? Es evidente que se está dando un trato diferenciado y que los indígenas sigue siendo la clase más vulnerable.
Acompañando al licenciado Rivero viene Francisco Jiménez, líder de la Coordinadora Nacional Plan de Ayala, Movimiento Nacional. Jiménez dice que él viene a expresar su gratitud al pueblo angelino, quien mostrará su solidaridad durante los casi 3 años que estuvo en prisión bajo cargos fabricados por el gobierno mexicano.
Me encerraron porque como organización campesina en Chiapas nos opusimos a los proyectos de concentración de la población llamados ciudades rurales, que concentraban a la población en pequeñas comunidades, en casas inadecuadas en cuanto a su espacio, en cuanto a los materiales de destrucción que eran destruidas por la precipitación pluvial, y que bueno, había mucha corrupción ahí del gobierno de Juan Sabines Guerrero, es la razón de por la que nos encerraron. Y bueno, salí gracias a la movilización que llevó a cabo la Coordinadora Nacional Plan de Ayala, a la que soy dirigente nacional, y a la defensa estratégica que llevó el abogado Leonel Rivero Rodríguez. De hecho, pues los delitos que se me prefabricaron fueron esos delitos prefabricados que no tuvieron ningún sustento legal y jurídico. Sin embargo, como se me llevó a prisiones de máxima seguridad en México, pues ahí me tuvieron mediante la táctica de tecnicismo jurídico, retardando por 3 años mi proceso judicial. Se presentó un amparo federal para ver si no había más delitos prefabricados antes de salir de la cárcel. No existía, aunque sabemos las artimañas que ocupa el gobierno mexicano para prefabricar delitos. Creo que el Estado, cuando detiene a un dirigente nacional que ha mantenido la dignidad y los principios durante su trayectoria, y que hemos dirigido una organización con principios muy sólidos y de honestidad y de compromiso con la gente, pues el gobierno le apuesta que al detenerte te doble, te quiebre y que renuncies a tus principios y a tus compromisos. El caso nuestro fue totalmente al revés, porque en primer caso pues no me doblaron en la cárcel. Aquí estamos ratificando nuestro compromiso con el pueblo, con la gente.
Era Francisco Jiménez, líder de la Coordinadora Nacional Plan de Ayala, Movimiento Nacional. En los próximos días, Jiménez y el licenciado Leonel Rivero harán varias presentaciones en el sur de California. Una de ellas será el sábado en el Centro Comunitario Papalut, ubicado en el 3201 de la avenida Maple, en Los Ángeles. Personas interesadas en más detalles sobre esta u otra de las presentaciones del abogado Leonel Rivero y el líder campesino Francisco Jiménez pueden llamar al 323-854-2060, 323-854-2060, en Los Ángeles. Yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Los invitamos a visitar nuestra página blog en pueblosinfronteras.wordpress.com
donde podrá opinar y encontrar más detalles sobre las noticias de Estados Unidos, América Latina y el mundo desde una perspectiva progresista.
Tune in every weekday to the International Middle East Media Center audio news program. Broadcast every morning before 8 a.m. and every evening before 5 p.m. only on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101 FM, freakradio.org. Check out imemc.org. Tune in every weekday to the internet.
Coming up next, Informativo Pacifica.
A continuación.
This is David Barsamian of Alternative Radio, inviting you to...
And actually coming up next on the stream of Free Radio, it's Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the October 17th edition. Stay tuned.
For only one reason, that president raises a question, who owns a land? The homeless, our problem, for only one reason, our president raises a question, who owns a land? Who owns the called a plan. Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home?
And that was Land by Five. You know, I don't get tired of it. It seems to be really on target. You're tuned to the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz at freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. This is the October 17th show, as mentioned before, 2013. If you're listening on this Thursday evening as I speak, you can call in 831-427-3772. 427-3772. Feel free to do so. Going to be talking about the latest attacks on homeless folks through official hate crime groups that are trying to institutionalize hate crime masquerading as public safety. That's the Mayor Bryant's Public Safety Task Force, or it's actually the Public Hysteria Task Force, or a task farce, I've called it, or it's actually the Public Prejudice Task Force is really perhaps more accurate. They meet every Wednesday. They're going to be meeting next Wednesday as they, quote, conclude or go forward with their deliberations. They're deliberating on a prefabricated agenda that mainly focuses on what middle-class people consider to be a nervous nuisance for them, the nearby presence of poorer people outside who have no place to live and so who live outside, and all the associated behaviors and difficulties that occur with people who live outside, particularly when they are criminalized and resources are not provided to deal with the most elementary human needs like waste and shelter. That can be a real problem. It is a problem for those who are concerned with the environment and who use the forests, a problem for those who find people sleeping on their property and get upset about that. It's a problem for people who don't like the sight of homeless people in visible spots. Anyway, this task force, or task force, handpicked by Mayor Bryant, and it'll probably get worse. Things are going to get worse under Mayor Robinson next month as she becomes mayor. You can hear them. Their audio files are available on the city's website under the Task Force on Public Safety, the Public Safety Task Force. I'm going to be playing some of the public comment session that they had a week and a day ago. They normally don't allow you to do public comment. I mean, you don't even get the token 2 or 3 minutes that the city council allows generally at their little meetings. But on every 3 or 4 meetings, they will have a special 3 minutes only per person public comment. And I'm going to play some of that vitriolic stuff that has come out of those meetings from the people who are really pushing the anti-homeless agenda and the drug war agenda and the fear agenda. I'm also going to play stuff from last week's protest, the Tour of Shame protest. It didn't actually have a Tour of Shame. We kind of stayed in one spot and talked to people in front of Forever 21 on Pacific Avenue. Showed people the reduced space that street performers would have come October 24th. And we're going to be coming back, and I'm actually going to try to do, going to make it a point to try to do a Tour of Shame on the 20th. That's this Sunday. So come on down if you want to check that out. There's also going to be a couple of other events happening in the near future on Saturday, the 19th. Street Performers Guild, or people interested in forming or reactivating a Street Performers Guild will be meeting at India Joe's. I think it's 416 Front Street or thereabouts. Anyway, it's India Joe's restaurant across from the Metro. There's also going to be I'm going to try to get in touch with Bob Aronson, see if we can arrange a coffee shop meeting. He's the fellow supposed to oversee the police department's internal affairs / professional standards unit, which is the unit that will supposedly bring justice to people who have been beaten up by the police or otherwise brutalized, harassed, or mistreated. Of course, they don't. But this guy is supposed to keep an eye on them, and of course, he doesn't. Or if he does, we don't know what the hell he has to say because it's all in confidence and goes back to the very people who support police abuse or increased policing, as they like to call it, I don't know, smart policing or homeless disposal policing, or I'm not the terminology is that's not their terminology. In any case, though, he's coming to town on Monday, which he does, I think, once a month or twice a month, supposedly to take complaints from individuals who want to go to some civilian person rather than to the guys in blue and the gals in blue are going to be supposedly overseeing their own gang, and that's, theoretically, that's a good idea. In practice, I'm not aware that Aronson has done shit, except on one occasion when he did refuse to accept the mayor and the city manager's spying on the first night festivities, the first night walk down Pacific Avenue that still goes on every December 31st, in spite of attempts by the police and the city staff to criminalize it. I guess we'll get to see that again when Lynn Robinson comes into power. We'll see about that. Anyway, that's going to be on Monday. I will announce a time when people and a place where people can come to the meeting if they want. And that's going to be happening Tuesday at the city council. There's a city council meeting. I don't have the agenda yet. Let's put it this way. I haven't looked at it yet, but I will be reviewing it before the Sunday show, which is at 9:30 in the morning. And I'll give you a report then. There is, however, a standard 5 o'clock oral communications period where Mayor Bryant will sweetly, with a smile, look at you and then cut you off in mid-sentence at the end of your 3 minutes, particularly if she doesn't like your message or, I don't know, maybe she has dyspepsia or who knows what. In any case, it's rather rude and abrupt what she does. But in a way, it has a certain honesty to it because I get a feeling that that council isn't listening to the speakers at oral communication, particularly those concerned with civil rights for homeless people, public access to facilities, and increased public transparency of city government. So that's 5 o'clock on Tuesday on the 22nd. Also, at 9 o'clock in the morning before the 5 o'clock hearing at the Board of Supervisors, there's going to be a $25 million giveaway to the jails, although it's a little unclear. Ancine Barras, the group that is concerned with reforming, if not abolishing, the prison system, is trying to make sure that the money goes to real services to help those who are coming out of jail and to stop those who are likely to go into jail, instead of expanding and giving the opportunity for more jailing of poor and homeless people. I was contacted today by Tash of Ancine Barras on this issue, and indeed Ancine Barras is meeting on campus tonight to try to plot a strategy, and they'll be talking with the supervisors in the days ahead. Who knows what will come of that. I'm impressed with Ancine Barras' protests outside the jail. I've joined them. They've come to Huff meetings. Huff activists have come to their meetings. Homeless people are in jail, and that's really the kind of axe or Damocles sword that the task force and the Take Back Santa Cruz gang and the Santa Cruz City Council and Police Department want to hang over the homeless to make this a less welcoming city so they can you know, reduce the number of homeless people who are here by simply scaring them all away. They like to put it differently. Scaring away the criminals, you see. But of course, they've defined criminals as people who sleep outside, people who use the same kinds of drugs other people use indoors and don't get any hassle for it, people who go poo-poo in the woods because there's no open poo-poo facilities. So, the prison issue will be coming up at 9 o'clock at the Board of Supervisors, 5th floor of the county building on Tuesday. I believe Tash of Ancine Barras is going to be in the studio talking about that on Sunday, as well as Aram James, the Palo Alto activist, talking about the actions of the nearby cities Atherton and Mountain View in cracking down on homeless people after Palo Alto passed its homeless vehicular habitation. You might think, oh, there's a crime wave. Well, there's not a crime wave, except there's now likely to be because being sleeping in your vehicle, as is the case in Santa Cruz after dark or after 11 o'clock at night, will be a crime actually day long throughout the day, habitating your vehicle. in Palo Alto, and there are similar kinds of parking restrictions and other criminalization measures are being pushed in Atherton and Mountain View as part of this gentrification right-wing riptide, as I used to call it 30 years ago, and it's still a right-wing riptide, and we have to find ways to break through the fear, break through the ignorance, break through the hatred, and stand up to confront the real problems, not these imaginary ones, these constructed ones, these scapegoats that are, these red herrings are being thrown in front of us instead of dealing with the real powers in the society that have created intolerable situations for people losing their homes, losing their liberty, losing their jobs, losing their health, you name it. So I'm going to begin by playing some tape from the last protest. I believe that's what we got. But to make sure that I'm on the right track, I'm going to do a little musical aside, but I'll be back. I'm not going to go too far aside. And you're welcome to call in, 831-427-3772. Former Phil Free, former Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcaster, Sacred Grove, I don't know if he's owner, co-owner, proprietor, frequenter, ran into him on the street the other day, he looked so middle class, I didn't recognize him, but that was Phil Free, all right. Hey Phil, thank you for the good song. Let's hear some audio from the protest on the 13th. It was billed as a tour of shame, but the tour never got going. And I'm a little bit embarrassed about that because that's what it's billed as. I'm putting out a flyer that is billed as a October 20th tour of shame coming up in 3 days, this upcoming Sunday. And I'm really going to make a real effort to set off shortly after 1:30 to show people historic spots in Santa Cruz where homeless folks and civil rights activists have successfully or unsuccessfully fought, struggled. It's part of the Santa Cruz history, really. And also more recent spots where there has been discrimination alleged against various businesses, ranging from the Coffee Roasting Company to Lulu Carpenters to Verve to the New Leaf Market Crizio Works, which I've talked about in the past on the air and we'll be talking about on the street. Let's, however, hear some stuff from the street. And again, your calls, if you're calling in on Thursday the 17th, Earthquake Day, or at least it was 1989, call in 427-3772 and we will talk. Well, if you're wondering why there isn't anything going out, it's because some malicious character has seemingly unplugged the appropriate thingamabob, which is most upsetting. So I'm going to have to do a little work on this. Hopefully it won't take me too long to get rolling. This may actually help me do it. Let's see how we're doing. I think this may be our solution. Sorry for the makeshift, but here we go.
So I'm down here at the front of Forever 21. It's around 2 o'clock. And here's a man with empty hands who's thrown away all his flyers.
I'm not throwing them away. This man is too efficient.
Yes, much too efficient. We need someone to make more flyers, hundreds of flyers. David Silva is doing a great job giving out flyers. And we have a woman who's poking her voodoo doll. Is that the mayor you're poking there with your tin?
Well, I don't know what the mayor looks like. Does he look like Van Gogh?
She's a very smiley woman.
Oh, well, I have a saucy lass I could poke.
Very good. I would like to probably do the same with certain saucy lasses, but that's not a story. We're talking with, what's your name?
Susan.
Hey, Susan. You brought your drum with you. You brought...
my dog.
Your dog with you. Cisco the dog.
And my flute. And my people.
And your flute. And I'm going to now determine if anybody wants to do a speak out before we try a tour of shame. So we're talking with a man with a guitar. Your name, sir?
Aaron.
Aaron, you're a man from out of town?
I'm from out of town. I'm from all over the place. I've been traveling pretty much nonstop.
You have a guitar on your back?
Yes, I do.
What kind of music do you play?
I play stuff that I really love, like pop music all the way from the 60s up to now.
Anything you composed yourself?
Oh, yeah. I write all kinds of original music, actually.
Anything about the street scene?
Like this? Any music about the street scene?
Yeah.
No, not yet.
Well, if you want to do a little performing here, you're invited today. We'll be here for another half an hour, and then we're going to do a walkie-talkie around town, a tour of shame, different places that have harassed street performers and so forth.
Okay. Well, that's cool. I think I'm going to set up right over there, actually.
All right.
Looks like a good spot. I'm going to see what happens. Enjoy. No. What's your name, brother?
I'm Robert.
Robert? Eric.
You go back.
Thank you for doing what you do.
You're welcome, Aaron. Thank you. So we're talking with that criminal former skateboarder...
Justin.
And Justin, you say that when you were younger here, they used to treat skateboarders harshly?
Yeah, because it wasn't accepted back then. This was back in the 80s, and they would take our skateboards, which is illegal. They would follow us around, harass us, beat us up. Rough us up for skateboarding.
I don't know.
And I actually have spent time in county jail a long time ago I didn't pay the ticket for not paying skateboarding tickets.
Criminal dog, you.
Yeah. No, it just, I understand not paying the ticket and everything, but I remember I was 18 the first time I did this, and I'm in there, and everyone's all, what are you in here for? I'm like, skateboarding. Just a little bit.
Stop the sidewalk snatchers.
But yeah,
sign our petition.
I left my contact info on here, right?
Very good. This is the amount of space that will be left on October 24th for a street performer, a guitarist, a trio. Not much space, folks.
It looks
like a spacey city council is doing this. Or something. Chalking an illegal activity in Santa Cruz. Don't try it at home. You might get arrested. And we see an activist chalking opportunity zone size. You might put illegal, and then legal inside.
And what was happening there was there will only be three squares of the... If you look at the downtown sidewalk, they're divided into these big squares. Well, 2 foot by 2 foot squares. And you'll only be allowed to be in a total of three adjacent squares as a limit to the space you're allowed, which really is barely enough for a person and their guitar. If they really squeeze in and they turn the guitar at the proper angle and they don't have any other items around them, And they also, you have to have to be 12 feet from the next person who's doing something similar, whether it's panhandling or political tabling or vending. And you have to be 14 feet from such a variety of objects that it excludes 95% of the sidewalk. So it's a way of shrinking the space on the sidewalk. That's what these ordinances are doing. It's part of the general attack on street culture and homeless people, where they're both being regarded as criminal nuisance problems that, if they aren't really public safety hazards in terms of actual recorded crime, they give the perception of make people some people fearful, and therefore they should be removed because people's fears are more important than, of course, other people's rights. That's really what the equation is. Highly unbalanced equation, but that's the one that seems to be the ruling aphorism, the ruling dictum here in Santa Cruz.
But if you want,
whatever
my suggestion. So it's around 2:25. We have a series of small tables and some yum-yums contributed by Gene of Occupy Santa Cruz. Sir, what are your thoughts about this as a muffin eater?
A muffin eater? It used to be a lot more. We're diverse down here on the street, which it would I enjoy it a lot more than the harassment going on.
Have you been harassed yourself?
No, I haven't.
Excellent. So how long have you been around?
I've been here about a year and a half now.
And what's your name?
Jeff.
Jeff, there's illegal street art over there. Step on that.
Let me pass on this flyer, Jeff, to someone else here.
Well, because they passed an ordinance that you can't have street art.
This is for you.
All right, thanks.
Santa Cruz, where I come downtown and buy and shop. Shop till you drop, but don't, please, do art or vend or politically table. No, no, no. The sidewalks are for shoppers, not for the community, not for artists, not for the poor. Nah.
Oh, really?
Sidewalks are for tourists only. Let's keep that in mind. So we're talking with...
My name's Casey.
And Casey is for Free Radio. Are you an old-timer, new-timer, local, out-of-towner?
I've been here for 2 years.
And what are your thoughts, having gotten a very brief, polemical description of this change that's coming October 24th?
Although I don't know much about the issue and I want to get more knowledge on it, as someone who's busked here in the past, I feel like this would not be something that's productive for the downtown kind of scene.
What kind of busking did you do?
I did musical busking with a harp and a violin with a friend. It was pretty like therapeutic kind of a intention that we set. So.
And how were you treated when you were busking here in Santa Cruz?
Yes, we were busking on Pacific Street.
And did you get moved along every hour?
No, we didn't.
Excellent. How long were you there for? What periods of time?
Probably an hour and a half.
And any other comments about how you were impacted by police hosts? And I guess in those days they didn't have private security guards.
I don't really have additional comments on it. I look forward to seeing how this issue plays out.
And we've been talking with?
Casey Kraft.
Thanks, Casey.
And now, kind of as a counterpoint, I'm going to play some of the public testimony at the Task Force on Public Safety that held one of its few public comment sessions a week ago Wednesday at one of the kind of outlying schools. I guess it was the middle school cafeteria, Branson 40 Middle School cafeteria on Poplar Street. And I don't know anyone who actually got to it. Actually, no, I know one person who got to it. And the audio is online in case you want to hear more of it. I'm going to start playing some of it. Some of it is really very distasteful. Certainly people have a right to express their opinions, however fascistic and abusive and hate-filled. But they give you an idea of the kind of forces behind this task force that are driving it. I'll play that. Now, or at least in a moment, and reminding you that you can call in if you've had some thoughts on anything you're hearing. In fact, I encourage you to do that. 427-3772. And here we go. This is the task force.
I feel like the welcome mat has been set out for a lot of criminals and drug addicts, and the welcome mat is not out for the families at all. So I feel like there needs to be a reversal. We need to take back that welcome mat. I don't want us to be seeing, you know, on Mugshot Santa Cruz, all these people who have been arrested, including child molesters, we even had the murderer. They all list their address as 115 Coral Street. I'd like to see the money that's going to attracting all these people here going towards something else. And I just want to say I also went to a cleanup recently, and I just can't believe how people are trashing our environment. I sat there for 3.5 hours realizing it's just layers and layers of trash, and I don't want to see that anymore. So, you know, I really hope that you make some strong recommendations and, you know, get rid of the needle exchange. I mean, I never had to tell my kids that they couldn't run around barefoot. I mean, now I have to tell them, okay, this is what a needle looks like. And I can tell you from living in another community that this is not normal, and I don't know why we're accepting this. Thank you.
Thank you, Governor.
Thank you.
Okay. We have Ron Weaver, followed by Samantha Abeling.
Well, thanks to Susie for putting together quite a table for us over the last 4 months. My attendance has been pretty good, and I recognize all of you, and thank you all for your time and the efforts that are going to come forward. From the get-go, from the May 29th meeting, we heard from the city manager that the city cannot solve all the problems, and we must utilize best practices. We heard that same night from Chief Vogel, who indicated that crime prevention was his number one priority, and that his department is also understaffed. The task force itself identified neighborhood crime as one of the top five concerns that you all had. We've heard some unbelievable facts over these last 4 months. 68% of the prison population hasn't even graduated from high school. 10% of our own population has a substance abuse problem. 1/3 of those in the jail are there because they're drunk in public. The city has a lack of affordable housing. Truancy is embarrassing where we stand in that, we found out last week or 2 weeks ago. And according to the FBI, Santa Cruz has the 6th highest per capita crime rate in the United States. These are tough problems, and no surprises here. On July 12th, the Sentinel ran an editorial stating that the city leaders appear to be willing now to make tough and probably unpopular changes that are long overdue. Some of those may indeed well come, but I was really pleased to see in the large rollout document that what I'm going to recommend is included. They were part of Fred Keeney's parameters from the very beginning, something that's reasonable, adjustable, and sufficient, a program that focuses on behaviors, an effort that was actually one of his own suggestions on his June 26th solution sheet, and that's the program called Night Walks. The city needs recommendations. Sacramento and Salinas. On May 29th, our city manager indicated that our city is much like San Jose in terms of its complexities. And I bring to your attention that San Jose recently adopted night walks as an implementation for their own community. One other theme that has come up, and that's collaboration. And I want you all to be aware of an organization in Salinas that's called CASP, Citizens Associated for Alliance for Peace and Safety. And this is what has been happening here over the last 3 months. All of these people that have been presenting to you gather monthly to discuss problems. So consider that as well. Thank you very much.
All right.
So we have Peter Klotz Chamberlain, followed by Samantha Abel.
Good evening. My name is Peter Klotz Chamberlain, and I'm on the staff of the Resource Center for Nonviolence. First of all, I want to thank all of you for the time and care that you're devoting to this, and everybody in our community, from law enforcement to service providers who are kind of on the front lines of our social issues. In addition to the policy issues, the Resource Center for Nonviolence is offering 3 workshops for anyone in the community on conflict resolution. It seems to me that one of the issues here is our discomfort and our fear in being downtown and being in different places in our community, and along with dealing with the real problems. One of them is to encourage our own competence in responding to conflict that we might see on the street, and also dealing with the conflict in our community about how to address these issues. So we're offering 3 workshops, one organized by or led by Jane Wheat Pomeranz, former mayor, another by Rick and Aviva Longinati of Nonviolent Communications, and another by Sam Abeling, who will talk in a second.
Thank you, Peter.
And if you want, I have, can I leave these flyers for each of you?
Yeah.
I'll give them everything.
Thank you.
Okay,
so we have Samantha Abel followed by Mike Allen. So I'm doing the Green Dot Bystander Intervention workshop that will be at the RCMV. I wanted to explain it a little more. It's a little abstract. Green Dot what? If you've seen like those epidemic movies, it starts like red dot, red dot, red dot, and it's spread everywhere. And those are incidences of violence, so domestic violence, interpersonal violence, sexual violence. And we all want to do something, but we don't know how. And this is a really interactive workshop, in-depth, that goes through the barriers that we face, and then how to intervene safely and comfortably despite our own personal obstacles. Because there's always a way when you have that uh-oh feeling, when you know, hear your neighbors fighting or someone on the street, how to diffuse that situation. And the idea of Green Dot is to replace those epidemic red dots and make it a violence-free community. So the ultimate goal is the social change and the non-acceptance of violence like it is now.
Thank you, Samantha.
Okay, we have Mike Allen followed by Marco Foreman. If you're ready. Hi. I've been a resident of Santa Cruz for 11 years, and during that time, I've seen it get worse and worse and worse, particularly in the last 3 years. We had a daylight break-in in our neighborhood. Yes. We had a daylight break-in in our neighborhood where a woman came home and found a man in her home. It turned out that he had a number of previous convictions. The city had paid for him to go through, the county had paid for him to go through substance abuse treatment. He was back on the street and was at it again. I'm very sympathetic to people that want to go through substance abuse treatment and want to get well. I'm on the board of Janus. I've been on the board of Janus for 8 years here, and I've spent a lot of time on that. But not everybody is really going to benefit from substance abuse treatment. That's an issue. My son has had, in the last 3 weeks, has had someone try to break into his apartment downtown. The police told him that this was a really bad guy, covered with tattoos from head to toe and just out of jail. My son's girlfriend works downtown, and she is followed repeatedly by people when she goes to work. She worked at New Leaf Market. Fortunately, she's not working there anymore, but she was followed repeatedly by people at 6 in the morning who were hassling her and who would follow her into the store. It's a frightening, frightening place down there. I know that there's a lot of talk here about taking care of the mentally ill, and I think we'd all agree that the people that are really mentally ill, we ought to do something about that. Most people would also agree that those people that want to go through substance abuse treatment and are open to that, that's a good thing. That's positive. However, I would quote Steve Clark in an article in the paper not too long ago where he said, there is a group of people here, and I think it's a growing group of people, who are seriously committed to a life of crime. And they are in Santa Cruz now, and I think that is the group that we need to deal with. And it's all respect for the Resource Center for Nonviolence and other people offering programs, even our own Janus programs. Programs aren't going to help with those people. We've got to give the police the support that they need to crack down and put those people in jail. That's where I'm coming from. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
We have Marco Foreman followed by Mary Tucker.
Hello, good evening. First off, I want to say thank you for forming this group. I think it's a very good response to try and solve these very difficult problems that we're experiencing at the moment. It's clear that the situation in Santa Cruz has become very dire in the last few years due to homelessness, crime, pollution, etc. I definitely sympathize with the first speaker, Mrs. Corte. She was mentioning her experience growing up here as a youth and how wonderful it was and carefree and safe. It was a very safe environment as a youth. Unfortunately, that has changed for the youth of today. I myself have a young child, and I've been having my doubts about raising her in this town. You know, in a nutshell, the state of affairs in Santa Cruz is borderline repulsive. The parks, beaches, streets, just heavily polluted, homeless people just wandering around town, all parts of the city, clearly disturbed mentally or with their own substance abuse issues. We really need to make some changes fast. Clearly, our resources are stretched thin. All the departments have voiced that, and hopefully in the future we'll be able to get more manpower to combat these problems. The downtown area and area around the homeless shelters kind of become a real skid row type of environment, and just people sleeping everywhere and just wandering the streets. I mean, it's very disturbing. Last week's meeting was very inspiring to me. I think that all the speakers were very knowledgeable about the issue of gang violence in Santa Cruz. I myself noticed a sharp trend an increasing trend of gang violence during the early 90s. I think a lot of that might have had to do with rap music and various other reasons. Also concerning the meeting last week, I thought it was I thought it was a very good idea to approach youths and try to influence them at a young age not to curb towards gang violence. And I think the Santa Cruz Police Department is doing a good job. The economy needs to get better. Substance abuse treatment centers, mental health centers, all that should be increased with effort, and hopefully we can solve these problems. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have Mary.
And now it's time for my commentary, which I'll try to keep brief, because I really want to play homeless people's discussions at the Red Church and at the protest. These speakers, I just sort of, well, of course, you'll draw your own conclusions, but there's no evidence presented, and maybe I have to have view the task force more closely, of the fact that the Santa Cruz scene is drawing criminals. And I mean, such evidence might be statements by, if you interviewed a bunch of people convicted of crimes, say, yeah, I came to Santa Cruz, it's a great place for criminals. I have not heard one, well, maybe one or two statements to that effect, but no surveys or, you know, established evidence that shows this. It's accepted as some kind of a basic fact when it's not a fact at all. The needle exchange situation about the danger of a needle sticking a child is very little. I mean, it has happened, what, half a dozen times in the last decade, maybe. If you really want to, I don't even know that I've heard of two or three incidents that have actually happened, and that just does not amount. It amounts to a perception and a fear that can be created, particularly if people push it. Who wants to have a needle under any circumstances, even positive ones? But there's no real there's no real danger. It's exaggerated for a political purpose, and it has its effect being exaggerated as political purpose. When the liberals come rolling in, the Resource Center for Nonviolence people with their, you know, their little proposed forums and their ads for their own, you know, nonviolence training. I mean, I think I took one of those 20 odd years ago. I'm not criticizing them. But what's really at issue here is the mythology that there is a public safety crisis. And in showing a kind of deferential respect to this task force, in not coming out and challenging the myths, and simply using it as a forum to say, well, you know, yeah, gosh, you got all these fears of violence. Well, come to the Resource Center for Nonviolence. We can help you out. It's kind of self-interested. It's kind of a way of ducking the real issues. It's a way of avoiding the kinds of... It's the way, I think it's what Scott Kennedy used to do decades ago when he was the co-founder of it and then became a politician with an agenda to collude with the Downtown Association. You know, he would not criticize the police department. They could break someone's ribs. They could cause a woman to miscarry, as they did in 1994. He wouldn't hold an independent investigation of that. Or if he did, we never heard about it. He proposed a crippled police review board, which, you know, he delayed for 3 years. And he wanted the Resource Center for Nonviolence, which to its credit refused, to have a police substation in there. I mean, you have to identify and explode the myths if you're going to look for real solutions. You can't jump upon them, as, for example, some sanctuary camp activists have done by saying, see, this will deal with a public safety crisis. There is a real crisis, and that's why we need the sanctuary camp. No. You need the sanctuary camp because there's a real housing crisis, because there's a real crisis on human rights for poor people outside. You need the crisis because you need the housing of a sanctuary camp because there is a need for, given the economic situation we're all in, people do turn to black market activities. They turn to theft. They turn to robbery, too. Petty crime, that becomes an issue too, particularly bike theft, which is indeed on the rise. But the impression that Santa Cruz is now suddenly this, things have gotten much worse as far as crime goes, is simply false, according at least to the police department statistics, which are always questionable, I agree. But where are the other statistics that show a rise in crime other than bike theft? I don't know about this FBI stat about Santa Cruz being the sixth most... per capita per in the country, except that I know I've not seen any stats showing a rise in Santa Cruz crime over the last few decades. And if that's not the case, then we have essentially the same situation we've had before, and just another group of people being roused to fear to denounce it. I'm not saying, you know, that break-ins into people's houses are a good thing. Hell no. I've had my house broken into, and I didn't like it at all. It didn't happen recently. It happened way back in 1996. But that's not a good reason to start blaming homeless people, to start criminalizing sleeping, to continue criminalizing sleeping, to cut back services for poor people outside, make it even worse for them. That is something that is a separate agenda where these fears are being used to promote that agenda, Take Back Santa Cruz type agenda. So anyway, those are my general thoughts about this issue. And, you know, it is a little depressing to hear people who are on the board of Janus, who sound like they're liberals, who have, you know, you might say conservatives, a liberal who's gotten mugged, that sort of thing. The use of pollution as a metaphor is another thing I noticed, which Marco Freeman, or Foreman, I'm not sure if I got his name right, talks about. It sounds a little similar to the kind of the ways that right-wing dictatorships described communists and socialists as a kind of vermin, where the pollution is the homeless people running all over. Oh, they're running all over. And it becomes something that people are just want to sweep away from their sight, not really address, because the way you address homelessness is with housing and jobs. Or you recognize there is such a fundamental problem with the economic system, huge banksters making millions and billions and doing so on the backs of everyone else as the homeless community and joblessness grows. But to turn on each other this way is just wrong. I'm going to go back now to some further interviews from folks on the street.
Karen Ireland.
And Karen, you know, you've just signed the petition. You're a busy woman. You got other things cooking, but yet you thought it was worth stopping. Why?
This is what makes Santa Cruz Santa Cruz. The people who show their arts and who entertain us. And I just think it's really sad that people who sit in office buildings tell us what we can enjoy and not. And I hope that they change their minds and let these people be.
How long have you been here yourself?
I've been here a year and a half.
And any observations over that period of time?
I have never, ever been hassled. I find the people to be clean and actually talented and funny sometimes when I talk to them. I've never felt pushed or unsafe or anything. I mean, I just think this is a wonderful part of Santa Cruz. I hate to see it go. And I see little box-shaped chalk marks on the sidewalk that apparently people are going to have to fit into that. And I just think they got other things to do. But draw chalk marks on the sidewalk in their minds and tell other people how they have to live.
We're running you for city council next time, obviously.
Okay, I'm up. Thank you very much.
We've been talking with
Karen Ireland.
Thanks, Karen. You should be on the. Say no. And say yes to artists and performers and musicians on the sidewalk. Strolling and shopping is not enough. Santa Cruz, where the sun shines and the sidewalk shrinks as you walk. But the conversations on cell phones continue. Sign our petition. Don't be scared. Aha, an illegal hat. So it's about 15-3 down here on the avenue, and we have a sort of a mellow scene. A man, a child, a woman and a dog, a guy standing by the ATM machine giving out subversive literature, and a fellow in a hat reading a flyer. And here's another guy sitting around with a sign, "This will be illegal October 24th. And perhaps should be illegal now, but there's nothing we can do about it. A quick interview, perhaps? Sidewalks are for everyone, not just those with money. Check us out, we'll check you out. All right, man. The shrinking Santa Cruz sidewalks. Watch street performers get driven away on October 24th. Or don't, in this case, maybe.
Or what?
Or don't. Comments for Free Radio on why you signed the petition. Because Santa Cruz is unique, and we want to keep Santa Cruz unique. And this is one of those things.
What do you say?
I agree.
Thank you very much, you two. An anonymous couple, one on a bike passing by. And here we have another person signing a petition against the downtown ordinances. Excellent. I'm glad to hear it. Save the sidewalks downtown. Before they disappear on October 24th. Let's get this on tape. We're talking with...
What?
What's your name?
My name's Amber.
And you are?
Alora.
And are you two local?
Yeah, I am. I've lived here my entire life.
And you are concerned about... You're both concerned about this. Let me start with you, though, Amber. What are your thoughts?
I feel that people should really be able to, like... If people have art that they want to sell, that they want to share with people, I think they should. Because, honestly, buying these makes me so happy. Like, this brings me joy. These are beautiful. And, like... this guy should be allowed to, like, support himself for his amazing talent. Like,
you're showing me some prints that you bought here in downtown Santa Cruz.
Like, 2 minutes ago, and they're wonderful, and I love them. And I support him every time. Even if I, like, don't have money to spend, I buy his art because I believe in what he's doing.
It looks nice. It looks... I bought some art yesterday myself. What about you? Again, we're talking with...
Alora.
And Alora, you're from an out-of-towner.
No, I live here. Yeah.
And what do you make of all this?
I think that, I don't know, art's a way to express yourself, and it's like, you should be able to express yourself in any way. And I just believe that, like, if people want to come down here and, like, share their art with other people, they should be able to. I don't know, just, like, on the sidewalks anywhere. It doesn't matter.
How old are you yourself?
I'm 16 or 17.
Have you had any problems with curfews and police here in Santa Cruz?
No.
And what's your feeling generally about homeless folks? Have you had good experiences, bad experiences?
I haven't had really, I don't know. They're just other people. I haven't had, like, bad or good experiences. They just live their life, and I live my life. I don't know. They're not really affecting me or anybody. So, yeah.
As long as they're not negatively affecting you, they're not doing anything wrong. Like,
they're trying to live.
Yeah,
they're
just... And again, we've been talking with...
Amber.
And...
Alora.
Thank you both. Santa Cruz on October 24th. Music and art will become severely restricted on the Pacific Avenue sidewalk. Do you like that idea? Stick around. So we're talking with...
Astoria Holland.
And Astoria?
Astoria.
How long have you been a downtown fan or a fan of the sidewalks down here?
About 2 years since I came and visited, actually.
And are you actually a resident here as well?
Yes, I'm going to college.
And what do you like most about the sidewalks and what do you like least?
I really like the art and the street music. And there isn't really anything.
We love everything down here.
Yeah.
What about you, madam? What's your name?
Sonia Gojavula.
And Sonia, are you too one of the evil students who lurk about?
Yes, that was me.
Where are you from?
I'm from Humboldt County.
And are you living up there still, pretty much? Or?
No, I live down here. I'm a student at UC Santa Cruz.
Any thoughts about this ordinance that makes it illegal to be on most places on the sidewalk with art, music, tabling, and so forth?
I think if you are performing and adding to the creative atmosphere of downtown Santa Cruz, you should be able to have as much space as you want.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Okay.
Oh, come on.
And we've been talking with...
Sonia.
And...
Astoria.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
We're talking with
Gina Marinelli.
And Gina, the infamous Gina. Where are you from, Gina?
I am from Santa Cruz, California. I've lived here for 15 years, and I was raised there.
And what do you make of this new ordinance change that's actually just another ratchet of the twist of the rope, so to speak?
My feeling is that Santa Cruz was always a place for people to come and be creative, to be expressive. We had the Cooper House down here where people were welcome all the time. time. There was never any trouble here. This is a madness to eliminate the one thing that people still have, their creativity, to take everything else away, and then also take away their public ability to be with each other in conversation, in communion, in honest goodness. Something wrong with that. Would they prefer we all sat down here with a gun and a knife and stabbed and killed each other? I mean, I don't really know what the hell's going on.
The businesses have their own sentiments and feelings to consider. Have you no respect for Forever 21, for New Leaf Market, for Verve, for the coffee roasting company? We don't want this kind of riffraff on the streets.
But were we the ones that invited Verve and Happiness 21 and New Leaf into the support system of this street?
Well, perhaps the city manager invited them.
Oh, is that who invited them? But I think that the public here in Santa Cruz supports a certain ideology. We support community, we support environmentalism, we support creativity and inspiration. We're artist community, we're a musician community. You're going to tell us that these are illegal?
I certainly am. I'm simply representing what the city council in their wisdom has voted to pass on to you.
So my feeling about the city council in their wisdom is that the city council's done shit to redirect traffic from Ocean Avenue. They've made the entranceways into Santa Cruz a disgrace. They don't take any consideration into how public transportation is moving through this city. This street should be closed. There are a hell of a lot of other issues to be dealing with than, putting musicians and jewelers. They're going to put you in jail if you show up here?
Well, they'll give you a nice fine, and then if you come back, they may have to take...
So we're still creating money for this city.
Of course! I mean, this is all about helping to fund social services.
That's right. We're funding social services. In the meantime, we have more than thousands on the street looking for something to eat, and we call them homeless and think that's okay. I don't get this. I don't get it.
Most of us don't. We've been talking with...
Gina.
And also standing by...
Angelo.
Anything, Angelo, you want to say?
No, I think Gina covered it pretty well.
No,
I mean, that's...
Maybe he talked about a little about the social culture.
No, yeah, pretty much he laid it out.
Now, also realize we're business owners. We've worked in this city. He's owned a business here. I work with people who own businesses. They've been organic food advocates forever. I would think that this is a crime, but also it's been a crime what they've done to people in the food industry here. The organic farmer has to pay thousands of dollars to be an organic farmer and go through all kinds of riffraff in order to get there. That's the same thing that's going on here. Taking what's natural to human beings and turning it into something that's called illegal.
We're trying to make a little profit here, Gene. You don't seem to understand.
Thank you for your
Thank you for giving us the opportunity. More people come and speak their mind, especially the young people.
Be on free radio probably on Thursday.
I love it. Thank you, Robert.
For the wretched and homeless cop will drag you down, downtown. They make you go to summer or break the weekend and lock up the submerged zone. Downtown. Yeah, they find somebody poor like you to understand you. Someone who is getting screwed and needs a helping hand to.
Yeah, that's downtown with homeless lyrics.
Talking with
Munira
and with
Olivia.
And are you two local?
No, I'm from D.C.
And you are
San Mateo.
So we're here for how long?
We've been here for about a month and a half now.
Any thoughts about what you've seen?
I love Santa Cruz, especially downtown. I love all the art. It's very live.
Enjoy it before it disappears.
I've pretty much fallen in love with Santa Cruz downtown. Since I've been here, I'm here as a freshman in college. So
you came back.
Hmm?
Are you a freshman in college now?
Yeah, I'm a freshman in college.
You're actually attending school.
Yeah.
It wasn't the art that drew you. It was the UCSC expensive out-of-state costs that you wanted to pay. Not really.
Not really. But I came on a leap of faith.
So. I hear you. And what about you?
Well, we're in the same situation. We're both freshmen. freshman in college.
Right.
This place is so lively because of the art and because of the people that come down here that are so interesting. And it breaks my heart to know that this will be ending soon. And it also breaks my heart that there's not much we can do about it. And I'm so glad that you're out here doing this, because nobody else is.
Well, you can be a part of this exciting movement. Let me give you a card. Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom is a group I work with.
Oh, great.
We have meetings every Wednesday at 11 o'clock at Sub Rosa. Come on down if you got time. Or call me up and I'll put you two to work on campus. I'm doing something like organizing a group up there.
That's interesting. You know, I did this actually back in San Mateo. We had something called Street Church.
Really?
And I went down to a train station with my mom, and they were, I mean, it seemed like a unity for homeless people, and we just, you know, brought a banquet, free food and blankets and prayer, because a lot of them are religious, and so, you know, it's not something new.
And there are groups that do that here too. We're more into the civil rights aspect of it, but, you know, that's good too if you're interested in, you know, renewing your what you did there, you know, doing something similar. You're probably pretty busy at college, but perhaps we can lure the two of you away. You never can tell.
I will. Maybe. We need to get settled in first. It's still about the first month of college, so we're still settling in there.
And we've been talking with
Olivia
and with
Munira.
Thank you both.
So we're keeping up the sidewalks will be illegal.
Yes, that's right. So you have a report on the chalk-in about a month ago.
Yeah, it was already after everybody chalked, all the friends and families had chalked all night. Nice, 99% was all beautiful stuff.
Right. Then the musicians were just playing right there at the surf shop thing and the corridor. And then one of the girls, Gina, was just making a heart. And then three of them came out through nowhere, just regular police. And just told her it was illegal and she gets a ticket for chalk. Chalking, even though it was all done as making a heart, and they hadn't ticketed 1,100 people that chalked. So just discriminatory, maybe, her opinion on the musicians late at night.
Yeah. Chalking, isn't it? We've been talking with
Rick. Joe.
Thank you, Rick.
We're a congressman. Let me start over.
He's working at this
program. I have. You're a congressman, can't find his ass with both hands, and he's making a deal. Nothing is real. Stupid hardly covers it, and you're voting him in every year.
A sad truth.
Picture a congressman.
Well, we're talking with
Danielle.
You have some strong feelings about this.
Yeah, I believe that they should be able to like converge and be together and do music and sell stuff without having to worry about the police coming in and stopping them.
And you've done this yourself downtown?
Or? No, but I live downtown, so it's one of the things that I love about it.
How long have you lived downtown?
3 years.
And there's been some concern that women do not feel safe walking the streets for fear they might trip on blankets, which will be illegal as well on October 24th.
I've lived all over, and Santa Cruz is the one town where I can feel that I can walk downtown at 11 o'clock at night and not feel worried.
Now, are you a tough broad? I mean, you know, if I hit on you, if I mauled you, or what?
No, I don't have a problem with that, and it's more, to me, the people downtown, the street people, and the people, the vendors, they get a bad rap. You know, I don't think that they're harmful or anything like that. I think they bring a sense of community to Santa Cruz, and they make Santa Cruz unique. They make Santa Cruz weird. So, thank you.
I like what you're saying. We've been talking with
Danielle.
Thank you, Danielle.
Thank you.
We have try three from the Beatles man.
I think it's try four, but anyway.
Yeah.
Picture a congressman, can't find his ass with both hands, and he's making a deal. Nothing is real. Stupid hardly covers it, and you'll vote him in forever.
With apologies to John Lennon, you've been listening to
Tony Cuspa.
And a couple of comments on these interviews from last Sunday and the protest. There will be another one coming up this Sunday at 1:30 in front of Forever 21. I'll be trying to do a tour of shame, which I've announced at least twice, and actually this will be the third time. Maybe it'll actually happen this time. I noticed the difference between the women who live downtown or visit downtown, who talk about feeling safe and being happy with the street performers and concerned about the restrictions on them, and some even upset about them, And those, the fearful comments and the angry comments and something has to be done comments that were released at the Brancaforte School far from the downtown. And it just occurred to me that there might have been a reason for the placement of this public comment section to, in order to, I'm not saying I have any inside information that would really show this as a confirmed fact, but I know that when there was a public comment section on a proposed changes in the downtown ordinances in 2002, 11 years ago, in the Porter Riley subcommittee, they were held at the McPherson Center, which is at Front Street and Cooper, downtown. And it was done to determine what people thought were the main problems. Well, a lot of people, including street performers and poor people and local residents and homeless people and other folks, merchants too, showed up. And when they voted, the big problems were police harassment and selective enforcement. That was, I don't know, 70 or 80 people in the room. Well, I don't remember exactly. Maybe 50 to 80 people, let's estimate, in the McPherson Center meetings. Of course, what the city council did is they completely ignored that, although the Sentinel headlined it. They found it kind of newsworthy, to their credit, and very unusual for the Sentinel. And they went ahead, and the city council passed the laws that criminalized 95% of the sidewalk for sitting and panhandling and 75% for street performing and tabling and vending, which is now going to be increased to 95% on October 24th, with all the 14-foot setbacks and the increased the 12-foot spaces required, the prohibitions on blankets and other things. So, I wonder if this public comment section was held far from Santa Cruz in a distant neighborhood so that it would become difficult for poor people to get to it. I'm going to play some more from that task force meeting, and it's online in case you want to hear more of the audio, which goes on for 3 hours, actually. But I think you need to see that there really are two different, fundamentally different perspectives and groups of people or viewpoints. It's hard to say, you know, what the majority viewpoint is. Certainly, there's been this hysterical uprising of people shaking cans of needles and ranting and roaring for the Take Back Santa Cruz agenda. And it's invaded the centers of power. I mean, it is now, in fact, it became the credo of this task force, which had an article that covered the most recent meeting yesterday. The article is by Shanna McCord, who I call, well, I'm going to read you now before we go any further, my commentary on that, which I actually put out on the Huff email, which you can get, by the way, by going online to huffsantacruz.org and signing up. But what I wrote about that, and you pretty much probably can predict the kinds of things I said, but I wrote this. The sweep of the lies, both in the Sentinel article and in the task force's title, is impressive, dutifully echoed by the Sentinel reporter, even by pseudo-liberals and misguided radicals who try to jump on the public safety bandwagon. The task force is not about public safety, but about public prejudice, directed almost exclusively at those outside, by necessity or by choice, and against those who come from outside the community, or outside Santa Cruz. Of course, not the tourists, and not the people who frequent the beach boardwalk, and not the university students, although they get a bad rep, too, from the conservatives. Things that a privileged, housed, middle-class person consider a nuisance or an eyesore are now relabeled or rebranded, to use the phrase of the task force, as a crime and a public safety issue. Deceptive packaging to slip through the poison pill. That is to say, you put the labels of crime and public safety around your real agenda, which is to run off homeless poor people, street culture, and to beat the drums for an outdated, outmoded, and discredited drug war, long championed by those whose priority is property values, gentrification, downtown, and a gated community mentality. It's kind of a Republican agenda, though the Democrats have fallen in line with it, too. By crime, the task force really means unsightly behavior by poor people, as well as drug prohibition. behavior that has nothing to do with real violence and crime, hence no record or investigation into rape, assault, white-collar crime, the record of the SCPD and sheriff, and the housed community crime rate, or the crime rate of people who've lived here for years and years as compared with those who come through. You don't see the contrast there. You just want, they're just showing you figures about 115 Coral Street as an address for infraction citations, which, of course, were created to harass homeless people who have the 115 Coral Street address. So naturally, because they have to sleep at night, because they sit down next to a building, because they show their wares on Pacific Avenue, or because they perform for donation, they'll get the tickets. They become a part of the crime problem. It really is kind of disgusting, this circular reasoning that is created to get rid of them. That's what the story is. And I continue, it's all part of the business gentry agenda to remove the visible poor and homeless from public areas and preferably from town entirely. Something similar was done with blacks, Japanese, Chinese, Okies, hey, even the Irish way back when. You criminalize them by defining their survival behavior as crime.
Good.
So, continuing here, sorry, I had a brief pause here to deal with a visitor. You define survival behavior of homeless people as crimes, i.e. sleeping at night. You then create penalties. Presto, new crimes, and a new crime wave requiring more police, more security guards, more rangers, more hosts, and more jail cells. You gasp at the new crime statistics that you have created, and that result, and guided by the homeless-aphobic hand of Deputy Chief Steve Clark, you terrify the community with a manufactured needle menace. Then you deepen, strengthen, and legitimize the police state methods being used downtown, along the levee, in the Poganip, in the parks, and elsewhere, as your solution. Ah, yes. Then you frighten the phony liberals into killing needle exchange, which heightens illness in the community. You pass more abusive laws that criminalize most street performers vending and other progressive street activity downtown. You run to the courts to scream and lie to get 17 days of false imprisonment for Ken Maffei, the flower man, falsely accused of stealing posies from the Baker Butler Memorial when he had a receipt for their purchase in his pocket. You ignore systematic and regular homeless abuse masquerading as cleanups and tacitly encourage police abuse, like Officer Vasquez's send him to the hospital slam down of homeless alcoholic Richard Hardy. Then you have police poodle Shannon McCord, the Sentinel writer, fluff up the coverage by helpfully ignoring real crime and giving phony credibility to this institutionalized hate group, the task force. Take one look at the abusive recommendations they're making to unwelcome poor and homeless people in Santa Cruz. You'll see endorsement of the worst myths of the drug prohibition war. More cops, harsher penalties, less services, recriminalization of marijuana. You'll see proposed attacks on homeless health, well-being, dignity, and life. No services for those with sitting next to a building, tickets, money to destroy homeless survival camps, cutbacks on basic services like meals, all the while ad rags like the Santa Cruz Weekly feature hate stoker Annalisa Cube on their covers as pinup girl and local hero. Her critics on community TV are shut down by new right-wing programming imperatives, justified as budget adjustments. It's going to be a cold winter under the regency of Rackham and Roustam Robinson, the next likely mayor. Mayor Bryant, Lane, Posner, and the whole city council cannot escape responsibility for this abomination. Take Back Santa Cruz has certainly taken back the agenda with its thinly disguised class war program. It's up to the rest of us to bring back Santa Cruz, which I wrote and appended to the article by Shannon McCord, which gives her description of the task force's deliberations that began yesterday. You're going to hear some more public testimony from the task force, or to the task force, actually, that happened a week ago, and perhaps some of your phone calls. You can call in 831-427-3772. And actually, before I turn back to the, litany of hate that we're likely to be hearing in front of this task force, or the attempt to sign on to public safety with a softer tone that the liberals are doing, that does not in any way really address the issues either of real public safety or of the kind of public prejudice and hysteria that is being created here. Let me read to you an item that was forwarded to me, which Chief Deputy Sheriff provided regarding this jail funding proposal that is coming up at the Board of Supervisors on Tuesday. This is a letter that Jeremy Verinsky wrote. I guess he's Deputy Sheriff to, I've never heard of him before, but I'll take her word for it. Tash, thanks for agreeing to meet on Friday. I don't know if it's convenient to meet at the jail or we can meet another place that's easier, and so forth and so on. I'll skip that. I also want to introduce Lieutenant Shea Johnson to our conversation. Shea and her team have been working on the application to the state since last year, and she'll be a valuable resource. This $25 million is coming from the state. And join us in the meeting on Friday. She's also in charge of the jail programs in our facilities. Some quick answers about our project. We are seeking to permanently close and repurpose a 250-bed facility located on our South County campus. Campus has become the fashionable phrase for prisons, prison-like and exclusionary homeless facilities, and other things that have nothing to do with real education and real freedom of expression and real, you know, college-like activity or facilities. Our main jail in Santa Cruz was built in the early 80s and was not designed for either long-term inmate stays or program delivery. With the advent of AB 109, the Prison Realignment Initiative, we are seeing a growing population of inmates sentenced to longer terms at our local jail that would have been formerly sent to state prison and should have actually been dumped from the whole jail system, because a lot of the people in jail are there for probation violations that are nonviolent and that simply involve insufficient contact or contact with police. Insufficient contact with probation authorities. I don't have stats on this, but I've seen this in individual cases sufficiently to concern me. Drug war nonsense, which doesn't belong in jail at all, making up a significant percentage of the people in the state and federal jails. And these people are being treated as public safety menaces, in the same kind of mentality that you see ruling the task force on so-called public safety. We are seeing a growing population, the deputy sheriff writes, of inmates sentenced to longer terms at our local jail that would have formerly been sent to state prison. Working collaboratively with the Community Concerns Partnership, the sheriff's office receives one-third of the money delivered to the county for funding AB 109, which is the proposal to, it's a half-assed proposal to send inmates to local county jails, again, instead of simply releasing them and recognizing the futility of the drug war and the absurdity of this huge amount of incarceration. But instead, they're getting sent to local jails. So now the local jails want more money so they can streamline, deepen, and upgrade their facilities. This is not, again, the deputy sheriff talking. This is me talking. Back to the deputy sheriff. I believe, he writes, that we have spent our money wisely, using it to expand our custody alternatives program and hire additional program staff for our facilities. The sheriff's office has for years been active in pretrial release to get people arrested out of custody regardless of their ability to post bail and other initiatives to keep our population. Santa Cruz County was in fact cited by the Northern California chapter of the ACLU as having one of the lowest percentages of pretrial population in the state. What has become apparent over the last couple of years is we lack adequate space for comprehensive programming services for our clients. This year we conducted a study on inmate needs. I'm going to skim this, actually, because what I want to do, I may read it in more detail when I have on the air on Sunday, either directly in the studio or by phone, Tash of Sin Baras, the group that wants to reform or eliminate prisons entirely. And she is working on making sure that this initiative provides out-of-the-jail services and not an increased internal incarceration environment that will, you know, make it more, it will allow an expansion of the prison system. So, well, it does say that just the plan was to take an older existing building, remodel it so it can use to support and deliver programs and services. So they want a new jail, but they're going to kind of spruce it up by saying they're delivering community services and programs. 64 college dorm type rooms, centralized eating and bathroom areas to house 311 people. An additional bed space at Roundtree would reduce the strain of the main jail. And that's more jail, is what it says. Looks like to me, again, I'm getting a preliminary reading of this. It's designed differently, individual rooms with doors that close but don't lock, allowing personal space, sort of prettying up the jail scene. Instead of releasing people into the community and using jails for people who need to be there, or people who we need to have there because we don't have anything else we can do with them. It looks like a PR statement by Jeremy, the deputy police chief, but I will reserve further comment until I hear from Tash Nguyen, that's her last name, of Sin Baras, and perhaps she will give us some thoughts on that. Again, about the upcoming Board of Supervisors meeting at 9 o'clock on Tuesday, where this $25 million is going to be doled out to the Sheriff's Department, not to treatment programs primarily, it looks like, but to remodeling and expanding the jail, making it more up-to-date. Not something I support. Let's hear some more from the jail advocates, people who want to put the sleep criminals and drug users and the grubby folks along the sidewalk, the panhandlers, into jail, or at least out of our sight and out of our town. You know, those criminals that the task force is hearing from or heard from a week ago. Here's some more from them. I'd hoped to hear some more from them. For some reason, it is not coming through. Strangely enough. And I'm not sure why. I think what I'm going to do, what I'm reduced to doing, is playing a somewhat degraded version of this. And I apologize for that. Just bear with it, because we do want to hear a little more.
I'm from Cupertino. I've lived here since 1964. 5, I've been coming to Santa Cruz. So I've been, you know, this is where I've been for a long time. She has no experience like that. God forbid, do not let your kids take off their shoes. But anyway, if you can help us in some way, because if anything happens to anyone on that campus, you'll have an exodus. Like, you won't believe, you just don't want to lose parents and kids out of the community. It's really important to keep our teachers safe. Thank you. Okay, the campus library has an issue. We have somebody who sleeps there a lot. She was to go, no, not in there. She's afraid to go downtown. Also, the one in Seagrave, if you can look at that, I've already asked police. There's a barricade at the front of that library, and people sleep behind it. I'm talking about on Garfield. It scares the kids to death. It's where the drop box is for dropping your books. And when you come around the corner, there's people sleeping there all the time, and you can't see them if you just drive by. You have to come in. So maybe the wall can be taken down. That'd be great. Thank you.
Following Robert, we have Deborah Elston.
Hi, welcome to my neighborhood. I live right across the street. So I've been able to attend each of the task force meetings, and it's been a great learning experience for me and my neighbors.
I'm hoping that you will. Need to do is ask the community what we can do to help the city. It seems like everybody's saying, what's the city can do for us? There's a lot of people who live in this town with great hearts, and I think we can really build a good volunteer base to get out there and do stuff in the city to make it safe. Personally, I feel too much emphasis was put on the homeless situation, too many meetings for the homeless. I think there are only a very small percentage of homeless people who are a real threat to our safety, and that should be addressed. I'm really disappointed in the lack of Latino population participation. I think more outreach should have been made to the Latino community that is part of our city. What makes me and my neighbors feel unsafe are the number of home robberies, car break-ins, and bike thefts going on in our neighborhood right here and all over the city. And also, what's most dangerous are gang-related murders, obviously. My suggestions, humbly submitted. First, why not utilize Santa Cruz Neighbors? We already have a great network set up to reach out to the citizens of Santa Cruz, to be the eyes for the police department, to watch our neighborhoods, to keep our city safe. Number two, reach out for volunteers. Our citizens really care about the city, as you can hear from everybody who speaks here and everybody who writes in. Number three, we need to address, as has been brought up previously, the high rate of truancy here. It's pretty embarrassing right now at this point. Number four, we really, I'm repeating myself, we need to offer programs and activities for kids after school. Number five, try to increase the funding for SIP, the Serial Inebriate Program. And lastly, continue to support our police department, and especially in their efforts to curb gang violence. Thank you.
Thank you.
Following Deborah, we have Carborn Norris.
Thanks, Robert. I'd say ditto.
I'm Deborah Elston with Santa Cruz Neighbors, and I work with neighbors daily. Your charge is to represent each and every one of those neighbors. In sitting through all your past meetings, I could probably take an hour, but I didn't bring all my notes from all those past meetings, so you're lucky. Thank goodness. I'm only touching on a few items. Tickets. Citations. These are just a few of the ones that I've picked up. This is the revolving door in our community. Why the courts don't care about our quality of life issues is beyond me, when they have the capacity to change this situation. This can be changed. There has to be consequences for these citations. A packet that I just recently picked up, not the first packet I found, it's for EBT, for cash, aid, and food stamps found in a cleanup. How does a person qualify? I've heard and maybe you guys can delve into this and verify, that our county gives up more dollars than any other county in the state of California for this. It's very clear that something is not working at our county level. I don't have all the solutions. It's going to take a lot of creativity and some brainstorming. But I guarantee the answers are here in our own community. The city is not in the health services business. They're in the safety business. We have fire, we have police, and they keep us safe. But we're paying the price for the services that aren't working. We are at a capacity level, and I don't see how we can continue to sustain that. Last week in a cleanup, I came across five people. Not from here, but they certainly are and have been creating quite a mess. I would challenge the stats that are given to us from the biannual survey. Just another note, watch what the county is doing with the marijuana ordinance. Grows relate to the safety in our neighborhoods, and they are specifically addressing those grows, but I don't think in a great way. Look up a NIDA study on marijuana and youth. Marijuana directly relates to lowering the IQ of our youth. We should be extremely concerned about this as a community in every single way. Neighbors and our community engagement can change Santa Cruz. You just need to engage everyone in taking the responsibility. Thank you.
After Harbor, we have Stacy Falls.
I read in the paper that this was, I thought this was going to be a gang task force, so I was prepared for that. Many faceted issues. I don't want to, well, okay. I appreciate what you said. I think this town has changed. However, we can remember that in the 70s, this was the murder capital of the world. So there have been issues before. I think there are two things that have changed in recent memory: homelessness and gangs. And I'm sitting here thinking why. I think it's tolerance. Tolerance. We're too tolerant. How do you change that? Well, zero tolerance. That's what I think. The how do you create zero tolerance? You don't accept it. Gangs, they're out of hand, man. They're out of hand. I have a stepdaughter. My stepdaughter OD'd. She flatlined. She died. She was revived. She didn't die. I wonder why no one required of her to give up the name of where she got the drugs. Nobody did. Nobody. I didn't feel qualified to do that. I didn't think she'd give it to me. Why didn't law enforcement get involved and say, where'd you get these drugs? Let's get this guy off the street. Let's end this. But no, we tolerated. We tolerated her OD. Gangs. I have a 15-year-old son. Scares me to death that he could be wearing the wrong color while riding his bike down the street and get shot because he's wearing the wrong color shirt. And then that the shooter, of course, gets accolades for shooting somebody from his gang members. I don't have any issues, but I'd sure like to be a part of it. I really commend everybody that's here, you know, for caring. That's why I'm here. I care. I want to do something about this. What do you do? I don't know. I came here to zero tolerance with gangs. Zero tolerance. Zero. How do you do that? I know why gangs exist. Knowing why they exist, you almost say, well, maybe they're necessary.
30 seconds.
All right, I'm through. I hope you guys do something. My email is attached to my name. I'd love to get involved. If you want me to, there I am.
Thank you.
Zero tolerance.
So following Stacy, we have Mark Slipkowski.
Hi, my name is Stacy Falls, and I'm a teacher at Santa Cruz High School, and I'm here representing the Santa Cruz Sanctuary Camp. There are 3,000 homeless people in the county of Santa Cruz, and the shelter system only provides 200 beds. That means that there are literally thousands of people tonight who do not have a place to sleep. And because of that, they're sleeping in our doorways, and they're sleeping in our bushes, and yes, they're sleeping at Santa Cruz High School. It's not a good situation for anybody. I mean, homeless people don't want to be in bushes, and they don't want to be sleeping in doorways. It's cold. Sometimes it's rainy. They face the threat of violence and theft from other homeless people. They face tickets because they know it's illegal. And it's not good for people who are housed. We don't want to have trash in our natural areas. We don't want to have to clean up our doorways just to enter our workplaces. So, you know, something's got to be done. And I know that some people wish we could just wave a magic wand and make homeless people go away. They think that if we just, you know, roll up the welcome mat, they'll all go away. And I'm asking you as the Public Safety Task Force to consider what the reality of the situation is. Like, we're really not that tolerant. We've got really strict panhandling laws. There's huge waits, months and months, to get a bed in the homeless shelter. And yet people are here. So, like, I don't think we're going to just magically wave a magic wand and make them go away. So, you know, if you look at the status quo, it's just not working. We've got to do something different. If we don't want them in our bushes and our doorways, and they don't have any other place to go, then the best thing we can do is provide a place for them to sleep. We're calling that Santa Cruz Sanctuary Camp. We want to give them a camp where they can keep their things, where they can sleep and be warm, where they can be safe, where they can begin to rebuild their lives. We want to have drug and alcohol cessation programs in the camp. We want to have access to mental health services. We want to build a community for people who are really trying to make a difference in their lives. There are several successful models of these camps all over the country. In Ventura, there's a camp that has a 40% success rate. 40% of the people who live there are moving up and into self-sufficiency. Dignity Village in Portland has great statistics. The crime calls in the neighborhood where that camp is are actually way less than any other part of Portland. There's a great camp in Placerville, and the gentleman who started that camp is going to be at our forum tomorrow at Santa Cruz High School at 7 p.m., and I have flyers for all of you. Please ignore the typo that's on it. We've completed our business plan. It's a great business plan with, you know, good rules, no drugs and alcohol, no violence, no theft, quiet hours. So we'd love to have you come to our forum, but we also really want to be able to present something longer than 3 minutes. We've got an awesome business plan. We'd love to be able to present it to you. By the way, I walk around downtown all the time as a small woman by myself, and I feel totally safe all the time. I love Santa Cruz, and it's a great place.
Following Mark, we have John Boulder.
Good evening. My name is Mark Shahusky. I'm a newbie here. I didn't expect to be here last Wednesday. I read with great interest in the newspaper after last meeting the comments that were made from Willie Stokes, a former gang member. And Willie said that the most important hours for at-risk youth were the hours between 3 and 9 p.m. And that steering young people into healthy after-school activities such as football, soccer, and dance would go a long ways toward keeping kids out of gangs. And your staff report tonight confirms this, and I personally couldn't agree more. What you guys are describing is a program that already exists here in Santa Cruz, and it's called After School Sports. Studies show that students who participate in after school sports experience lower rates of drug and alcohol and tobacco abuse, higher graduation rates, higher GPAs, better attendance, and most importantly, and you'd think that with all these well-documented benefits, that it would be a no-brainer to support these programs. However, it might surprise you to know that high school sports receive no funding from Santa Cruz City School District, and they are in a severe state of decline. The entire programs are paid for by parent fundraising and donate to play. Student participation is dwindling at a very steady pace, And this pay-to-play model is not working, and it is affecting students from poor families disproportionately. And these are the very same students that we should be supporting and encouraging to play. Now, I know there's a lot of well-meaning people serving on committees and boards much like this one who are kicking around great ideas of starting this program or funding that program. And I say, instead of trying to reinvent the wheel, let's just take advantage of the program that we already have. It's got a massive infrastructure of fields and courts already in place for the staff of great teachers and coaches who engage these kids every day. Let's fully fund and support that program. How can we expect maximum participation from students and families if we tell them it's going to cost $200 to $400 to play on a high school sports team? Why would we create these barriers to such a well-documented path to success? I propose that your group looks into ways to help our local schools fully fund after-school sports. Offer up matching funds to up to a fully funded program for each school. As a former school board member, I understand school finance. And when someone offers you a chance to fully fund a valuable program for 50 cents on the dollar, that's something you take a look at. How much are we talking about? Probably less than $70,000 per high school. That's a pretty small amount to serve a couple of thousand students when you compare it with how much it costs to incarcerate or rehabilitate only a few of them. In today's paper, there's an article providing details of a $24 million grant that the Santa Cruz County Jail is seeking to increase beds and try to reduce repeat offenders. $24 million. That would fully fund all three sports programs at all the schools for 60 years. This is not just a Santa Cruz City School Board problem. This is all of our problem. Thank you.
After John, we have David Harrington.
My name is John Golder. I first came to Santa Cruz in 1978. I raised three sons down in the Myrtle Street area in the mid-80s, which there was gang influence. I got my kids involved in soccer, junior guard, surfing, fishing, camping, scouting, water polo. They did really well. Two of them lived with their families in Santa Cruz. It was not easy. I was a single co-parent during part of that time. The discipline, the sacrifice, the teamwork, the sportsmanship, the fitness, and the fun. As Mr. Stokes told you in your last meeting, those critical hours after school and the sports. Having raised three sons, young men especially need activities. They need activities where they can belong to a group, where they can impress their peers, where they can be brave and daring, and where they can earn respect. And in that group, it needs to be mentored by adults with structures and rules and values. Now, there's hundreds and hundreds of people in this community who are volunteer parents and coaches that help do all the different sports activities in Santa Cruz. So, if you're going to make a recommendation to help in this area, then we need to have another very serious discussion, because I've been studying the Santa Cruz Parks and Recreation and what they have and have not provided for the money that they've been given over the last 30 or 40 years. I've devoted thousands of hours to this. The city has pursued a high-density high-density planning, and they have a parkland dedication ordinance and fees that by any measure is a complete failure. In 1994, when we lost the fight to get some sports fields at Poconip, I initiated a sports field study. We found out that 15% of the city at that time participated in active sports. We determined we needed at least 20 to 30 acres of more sports fields.
You have 30 seconds.
Okay. The city has had no master parks plan for 30 years, no net gain in sports fields for 40 plus years. It's benefited from over $60 million to get parks since 1973 and acquired over 1,000 acres, but has virtually no increase in developed parkland with facilities. Two-thirds of the ball fields and half the neighborhood parks the city counts half the ball fields are counted as parks for the city, but they don't give the schools the Quimby funds. We don't have police athletic league. They have them in Watsonville and Monterey. Okay, can I just one sentence? I've had some serious and potentially productive discussion with the directors of planning and parks and recreation, and I'm looking to put together a solution that can do it with private resources. And all the city needs is an ordinance. If you go on Good Times, the newspaper's website, Good Times, and look at a West Side proposal, you'll see what I proposed. They wrote an article about it. I'd love to get some help in making that happen. Thank you.
Following David, we have Regina.
And that is getting close to all we have time for from the task force on public hysteria. Although, I got to say, you know, these proposals that members of the public are presenting, sports fields, after-school programs, you know, funding are for these kinds of things, I don't really have a problem with. And I notice, of course, you have the same old voices, Deborah Elston, who is the big cheese on the Santa Cruz Neighbors, who helped get Robinson and Comstock elected, is selling the same swamp oil, you know, the same snake oil. Tickets and citations produce a revolving door. They do, because the tickets and citations for sleeping and quality of life, as she calls them, or survival activity, is going to keep on going, regardless of how many citations are issued. She wants to push a police solution, but she doesn't give you, and she also wants to push marijuana ordinance changes. Again, she has some medieval ideas about marijuana and a lowering of IQ. I haven't researched her information, but I think alcohol is a much bigger problem than marijuana. Does she propose alcohol prohibition? If not, maybe she'd prefer it. But, you know, we've seen these are failed solutions that are being touted because they have been accepted and fund police departments for decades. Stacy Falls gave a commercial for the sanctuary camp before an audience that probably couldn't be less interested. I don't think any of that audience showed up the next day. Well, I was only there for half the meeting, but I'm not aware that there was much in the way of really critical dialogue between the Take Back Santa Cruz, Robinson Comstock, Know-Nothings, who have taken over the city council and who have long been really the unseen claw in the city government anyway, whether it's the police department or the staff or the redevelopment agency with Julie Hendy and Martine Burnell and Dick Wilson, previously the city manager. Everything Stacy says is certainly true about the sanctuary camp being, housing and camping, emergency campgrounds being necessary. However, it's also true that a set of rules is not a business plan. Although the business plan she presents is interesting, I encourage people to look at it. I'm going to be playing more from this task force public comment section, and also from the commentary from homeless people at the Red Church and in the protests on Sunday when I return. But I want to read something from an email that I got that I think lays out, maybe repeats what I've said. Robert, this writer, writes, I can't make it to the meeting, but thanks again for the info. I did read a lot of it. He's talking about the task force meeting yesterday at the police station. A lot of it quite disturbing. Of particular interest to me is the idea of arresting people for not paying tickets. As far as I can tell, the playbook goes, one, endlessly multiply new ordinances restricting not shopping downtown or being poor downtown. Two, send police to harass and give lots of tickets to people who are doing nothing directly to harm anyone. Three, when many poor people are unable or unwilling to pay the fines, send police back to arrest them and throw them in jail. 4, all the dirty, lazy, poor people will disappear. 5, happiness reigns for all the good people of Santa Cruz. If you believe that narrative, then you can probably have some sympathy for the task force's prefabricated agenda and pre-selected people who are on that task force, appointed by Mayor Bryant after massive protests by Take Back Santa Cruz and Alicia Cube's group and the Clean Team, who did a lot of needle shaking and a lot of hysteria raising and a lot of hate rousing, really, is what it was. And actually, I'm not entirely unsympathetic to people who hate the Santa Cruz City Council's lack of action, dodging, lack of transparency, misdirection of funds. I think that is hate-worthy, for sure. But not when you start hating homeless people as the target group. To hate people who are poor, who are the most vulnerable, who are probably the most trampled upon, and to rebrand them, as they like to say, as this sort of wild and crazy group of hedonistic assholes who can best be described in DiCenzo cartoons as dirty, filthy, abusive individuals who have flies circling around their heads, who want to live off the public trough, and who are shooting up with dope all the time and stealing for their... It's really kind of the image that Hitler used to describe Jews in Germany, that different nationalities use when there are these national conflicts. I wouldn't be surprised if it happens in Iran and Iraq, mostly in Iraq, as the Shiite-Sunni divide and civil war deepens. Again, I don't know. I mean, I'm speculating there. But it's nasty stuff. And I'm going to leave it at that. Invite you to come to the Street Performers Guild get-together Saturday at 11 o'clock at India Joe's, the cafe across from the Metro on Front Street, 416 Front Street. I hope I got the address right. And Sunday to come to the protest, the Tour of Shame, which I really try to get rolling at 1:30 outside Forever 21 downtown. You can also reach HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with, by calling 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 423-4833. You can go to the website, www.huffsantacruz.org, and check out the articles that I've selected, mostly some others as well, but I'm pretty much the main writer on that website, though there are other people who've done that. You can catch the archives of these radio shows on that website, again, huffsantacruz.org. And we need to refocus what's really happening, rebrand, if you will, the whole situation in the really accurate way that I think is really a straightforward depiction of truth, that there's... The real problems in Santa Cruz have to do with homelessness, housing, jobs, maldistribution of power, an unresponsive bureaucracy. And that's why even when groups I don't agree with get together to start organizing and raising their angry voices, I can't blame them. I can't blame them. So let's hear a little bye-bye music before Uncle Dennis comes in, or... I'm not sure if it's going to be Uncle Dennis or a sub this week from the cream to the dregs. And I will be back on Sunday. And I'll also be around on Saturday at the Street Performers Guild meeting at 11 o'clock in the morning at the Trader Joe's. I'm sorry, India Joe's. So join me there if you'd like. And we'll see each other there or hear each other there.